This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In a little bit, writer Joe Queenan will join us to talk about his new book, True Believers, The Tragic Inner Life of Sports Fans. But we begin this hour with news of the resignation of the two top editors at the New York Times. Executive editor Howell Raines and managing editor Gerald Boyd stepped down after weeks of mounting criticism over the scandal involving reporter Jason Blair. Blair resigned May 1st after the Times determined that he had committed frequent acts of journalistic fraud. The two executives became the focus of an internal investigation over how Jason Blair was promoted and given plum assignments despite concerns about his work. Then last week, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Rick Bragg resigned after he was suspended for fudging datelines and using the work of an unpaid stringer without attribution. Times publisher Arthur Sulzberger Jr. accepted the two men's resignation this morning in an emotional announcement in front of hundreds of staffers at the Times. He also announced that former executive editor Joseph Lelyfeld will serve as interim executive editor. If you have questions about these resignations, what they mean for the Times and for journalism, give us a phone call. If you lost faith in journalistic credibility, will these resignations restore it? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Seth Mnookin joins us now. He's media writer for Newsweek magazine, and he's with us from his office in New York. And thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Were these resignations expected?
They were expected to some extent, especially after the drumbeat had gotten a lot louder over the past couple of days. But I think there was still an enormous amount of surprise. I should say they were expected, but no one would have been shocked if Raines had stayed. There really was no way of knowing because the Times obviously is not run as a democracy, but is run by the publisher, Arthur Sulzberger Jr. So there was a lot of resignation within the newsroom about the resignations and a sense that it was time to turn the page.
A sense of relief, you mean?
Well, there was a sense of relief and also a real sadness. I think even people internally who had a lot of problems with Howell and how he ran the paper were very aware of the tragedy. I mean, this is the job that Howell had been working for most of his adult life. And the fact that he was brought down by a really extraordinary confluence of events is a sad thing for everyone, even if you felt like he wasn't the best person to lead the paper.
Now, you mentioned a louder drumbeat. What's been happening over the past couple of days that made this inevitable?
Well, after Rick Bragg resigned last week, actually in the days before Rick Bragg resigned, he gave an interview to the Washington Post in which he really denigrated the reporting efforts of a lot of his colleagues, and he said that Times national correspondents always rely on stringers to do the bulk of their on-the-ground reporting. And neither Howell nor Gerald Boyd immediately rose up in defense of their staff. Now, to be fair to Howell and Gerald, it's not as if they weren't dealing with a lot over these last couple of weeks. But after a couple of days of those comments sort of hanging out there, there was really a torrent of emails, some of which were posted on internet media websites, some of which were just sent around to the staff, really coming to the defense of the paper's correspondents. And a lot of people felt like that's what the leadership should have been doing. And to me, at least, that was the clearest indication that that newsroom had more or less become ungovernable. In the last couple of days, you had department editors saying publicly that it didn't matter whether Howell stayed or left. They had to get on and get on with the business of putting out a newspaper. And when you have people saying those sort of things publicly, I think, again, it's a very clear sign that the newsroom had lost the faith that they needed in the current leadership to carry them through what was going on.
Is it fair to say that the publisher and these two editors were surprised by the amount of anger on the Times staff that developed in the wake of the Jason Blair incident?
Well, one of the things that was really clear in the wake of Jason Blair was that there was an incredible amount of built-up resentment in the newsroom towards Howell Raines and Gerald Boyd about the fact that there seemed to be this seemed to be a very top-down organization. And that was a change under Howell. Joe Lelyveld, who was editor before Howell and is now editor again, was someone who was seen as given a lot of authority to his desk editors and different department heads. And so I think Arthur Sulzberger Jr., the publisher, was the most surprised because it seems that he had had most of his contact with Howell. And Howell and Gerald, even though they were aware of some of the resentments, I think were also surprised. You know, it's not the fact that there was this really shocking scandal in the paper's midst that brought down Howell Raines. It's the fact that that scandal occurred under an editor who really had no reservoir of goodwill to carry him through this kind of crisis. Unlike, say, Ben Bradley, who was the editor of the Washington Post when Janet Cook was there and made up a story that went on to win a Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah, because he'd seen the paper through Watergate, among other things.
He'd seen the paper through Watergate, was a legend in the newsroom. And Howell, I think this is something that a lot of people sort of don't realize, before becoming executive editor, had essentially never worked in the Times' newsroom. He had come up through Atlanta and Washington and London, and to the extent that he worked out of New York, that was when he was the editorial page editor, and the editorial page is on an entirely separate floor from the newsroom.
Yeah, separate planet, a lot of people would say.
I'm sorry?
A separate planet, a lot of people would say.
Exactly, right. I mean, there's sort of a Chinese wall between the two, between the editorial page and the newsroom, and so he didn't have the kind of constituencies that one would need to ride out that kind of crisis.
The seven Pulitzer Prizes?
Well, the seven Pulitzer Prizes that he won within his first 3 months on the job, I mean, he assumed, he took over as executive editor in early September 2001. Really, the first big story he was working on was the September 11th attacks. The Times won six Pulitzers for their coverage of the attacks alone and another Pulitzer that same year, an unprecedented number. There's, again, and this gets into the whole tragic notion of this affair, there's a sense that his extraordinary, almost meteoric success in the early days, all that really did was fuel his sense of always being right, and it led him to be more imperious, and it led him to listen less to the people beneath him. And so in some ways that might have been, you know, sort of a mixed blessing. Of course, you know, this is, I haven't talked to Howell, and so this is all, you know, sort of second-guessing what went on. You know, certainly the memory of those Pulitzers seemed to fade very quickly when another scandal came along.
Let's get some calls from listeners. We're going to be talking about the Times story for a few more minutes, and then after the break, we're going to talk to Joe Queenan about his new book, True Believers. But Rebecca joins us. Rebecca's near Valdosta, Georgia.
Yes, sir. I'm a recent journalism graduate, so I've been watching this pretty closely because I really think that the whole Jason Blair thing negatively affects young journalists. You know, the announcement of these resignations, I'm really interested to see how do you think this will affect the news cycle. A lot of people look to the Times as kind of, you know, they're one of the big boys. So I was just wondering what y'all thought about that.
I didn't exactly understand the question, how it will affect the news cycle.
Like, yeah, because we get a lot of breaking news comes from the Times, and the Times is the paper of record,
right,
basically for the whole country. So I'm wondering if there will be like a shift in the balance of power between the larger papers.
Right. Okay, I got it. I mean, one of the interesting things, and I always assumed, and I still assume, that the Times, more than any other single news organization, really drives the national news agenda.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I was a little bit surprised to learn is the extent to which that's not true. I think that the proliferation of websites, the fact that you know, a paper in Kentucky can have the same kind of reach that the New York Times can by virtue of having its product available to anyone who has a telephone line and a computer, means that there's been a decentralization of news, not just away from the New York Times, but away from New York City, away from the sort of media media powerhouses. Unfortunately, that's occurring at the exact same time that newspapers and TV stations and radio stations across the country are cutting their budgets and looking to squeeze out more and more profits.
Seth, no disrespect for the Louisville Courier-Journal, but
right.
The Times is still the most important single media outlet in the country.
I absolutely agree, but it used to be, 10 years ago, a story wasn't a story unless it appeared in the Times. And
right.
Now, if a paper in Louisville breaks a story that's a significant, serious story, the rest of the country doesn't need to wait for the Times to follow it. They can immediately start working on whatever that paper broke. And so I think the Internet has, to some extent, brought about a very slight democratization. But you're absolutely right. I mean, the nightly news broadcast, the daily layout for a lot of the country's papers are still determined by that New York Times news budget, by what's going to be on their front page the next day. And I think we're still going to see that, although one of the reasons that people at the Times felt that these resignations were so necessary was there was a real sense that the reputation was taking not just a short-term hit, but a more serious, lasting hit. And this is a company that makes a really extraordinary amount of money from its syndicate, from selling its product to other newspapers and other news organizations around the country and the world.
Okay. Rebecca, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Karen, and Karen's with us from San Diego.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Or good afternoon, I'm sorry. I'm appalled that Mr. Sulzberger did not stand behind these men. I know the story behind them getting their jobs and how Mr. Sulzberger fought tooth and nail, fought his editors, to get these gentlemen installed in their jobs. I think they've been doing a good job. If anybody should have tendered their resignation, it should have been the editor and the people who were directly responsible for the journalists.
The Jason Blair and Rick Bragg.
Jason Blair, yeah, exactly. This reminds me of what happened to Bob Green in Chicago.
The columnist for the Chicago, I think, Sun-Times.
Yes. And when he ran into a bit of trouble with somebody trying to blackmail him, his publisher dropped him like a hot potato, unceremoniously and devastatingly.
Well, without getting too much into the Bob Green case, Seth Mnuchin, at that meeting in mid-May, the extraordinary staff meeting, not only did Howell Rein say he would not resign, Mr. Sulzberger said he would not accept his resignation.
Right. I actually need to disagree a little bit with the caller. I think the sense in the newsroom was that Hal Raines and Gerald Boyd were the people responsible for supervising Rick and Jason. There were numerous editors who raised a lot of questions about Jason Blair's reporting. And it seems that those warnings were either discarded or in some cases flat out ignored. And there were also a lot of people who had concerns with Rick Bragg's work, obviously not for the same reason. Rick Bragg is not accused of plagiarizing or fabricating at all, and I don't want to conflate the two cases. But both of these reporters were people who were seen as having somewhat unique relationships with the people at the top of the masthead. So I do think there's something to be said for ultimate responsibility lying with the people who run the product. But I don't think that Howell and Gerald were resigning just because of what happened with Jason Blair or Rick Bragg. It was a larger sense that this was a news organization that could no longer be governed by the people who were governing it.
Seth Mnuchin, thanks very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
We'll look forward to your coverage in Newsweek magazine. He's the media writer for Newsweek, and he was with us from his office in New York. When we come back, Joe Queenan and True Believers, the tragic inner life of sports fans. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.